Hey everybody, and welcome to The Void, a show dedicated to filling the void between being an employee and becoming self-employed. Most people refer to starting their own company as taking the leap, as if they're blindly jumping off a cliff and into the unknown. This show is here to help you understand that it doesn't have to be that way. As always, if you like what you're hearing on the show, please do us a favor and help share The Void with somebody else who might be wanting to start their own company. We saw an opportunity to help others understand that self-employment is well within your reach. And just as our businesses have grown organically and by word of mouth, we want this show to grow the same way. So if you see somebody asking questions about starting their own service-based business, please do us a favor and send them a link to the show. I'm your host, Mitch Smedley, and with me as always is David Hilton.
Mitchell.
David.
I got a few things I want to talk about before we get into it. Okay. One, I'd like to apologize to all the listeners that are regular. I did not get a podcast out on Friday when we got back from the wet show. I said I would.
Yeah.
One, I left the camera in your truck.
Yep.
Two.
You were tired as hell.
Yeah. Three, I didn't have anything to post because we didn't do
just a little quick
podcast.
Yeah.
We did four with Tradewinds members, which will be, 10 to 15 minutes. And then we had your training that you did for our guys at the wet show, but I had nothing to post anyway.
Yep.
So I apologize to all the listeners up front.
Good.
Good.
That's the only apology you'll ever get from David.
That's not fucking true. They're few and far between.
They're pretty rare.
But it's not going to be the only one.
Yeah.
We had, full transparency, we had a lot of fun at the wet show. I'm still dragging. I'll say that. We got back Friday. What time did we get back? 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon?
Yeah, something like that.
I'm still tired.
Yeah.
I'm still fucking tired, dude. Saturday, I was worthless. Sunday, I was worthless.
It was a long week.
It was a long week,
but
well worth a week.
Imagine how tired that poor guy is that ate shit on the scooter.
Dude.
So, Indy, like all major area cities, has those like...
The e-scooters
that you can rent, you swipe your credit card or get the app or whatever.
Yeah, it's like $10 or $20 or something.
And we're there night one, standing outside of our hotel. It's almost midnight.
Nice hotel, by
nice,
the way. Like
nice
this
hotel.
Is one of the nicer hotels
it's
downtown.
The Conrad.
Yeah, it's
and,
nice.
And we hear this loud bang crash and look over, and this dude has hit the curb on the e-scooter at like...
25
like top speed
30 mile an hour
and he hit the pavement and he started leaking all over the place
and
he didn't move. There was a moment where he kind of got like sat up, but then he was right back down.
TBI, man.
And I don't know what happened to him. We think we may have found him on Facebook. We aren't positive. I'm sure there's more than one person that ate shit on a scooter, but
oh, I know for a fact there was more than one.
This dude, like the guy that we found on Facebook was up and around the next day. I don't think this dude would have been up and around the next day because he didn't move for like 30 minutes.
Ambulance.
And I went up to my room and this was right outside my room window. And like I'm looking down and it was ambulances and fire trucks and cop cars. And
the bloodstain was there.
The bloodstain was there until we left.
Yeah.
Until it poured down rain that night.
Dude, it rained. It was still there.
Yeah.
I mean, it was big. I mean, I'm talking...
Yeah. That guy leaked a lot of blood.
I saw it 2 days later.
Yeah.
Still almost a 2-foot circle.
Yeah.
That's not good. I hope the guy's okay.
Yeah. If you listen to this show and you know who it was,
let
us know.
Dude, he took out a part of the curb.
Yeah, part of the concrete curb is missing.
There's a spot that was probably the size of like...
A football?
Yeah. Gone.
Missing. Yeah.
Missing.
That's how hard he hit the curb.
Poured concrete curb. Gone.
Yeah.
I wonder what happened to the scooter.
Oh, I'm sure it's totaled.
Toast.
Toast.
Skyler, one of our new members, which we've known him for a long time.
Yeah.
He's been to a few of our events. He posted a video of him on one.
Yeah.
He was like, I think his post said something like, the best part about the wet show was the e-scooters.
Oh, that's funny.
Like, he was down like, I don't know, 4 or 5 blocks from us.
Yeah.
He's just riding it up and down the street.
Yeah.
Whee!
They're like fat chicks. They're fun to ride until your friends see you on them.
You know, once you're over 40, I don't think that applies. You're
no,
just like
you're right.
Waving. Hey!
Yeah.
hey, you want in on this? Like, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
You want to finish her off?
Yeah.
What's that, Fight Club?
Yeah. God. Well, that guy definitely finished off that scooter for
well,
sure.
Well, hopefully he's all right.
So,
are you tired of complex and high credit card processing fees? The Void Podcast has negotiated exclusive rates for the Void listeners. This program's tailored for trade businesses like yours. And if you're using House Call Pro, switch and you can expect to save $80 for every 10,000 you process per month. Don't let high processing fees drain your profits. Visit empowerpayments.com/the void or call us at 913-423-1265 now and unlock your savings.
Good food, but great times.
All in all, good wet show. Sold some price books, got some TradeWinds members, got to meet a lot of people that have listened to the show but never seen us or met us. So
yeah, we had a lot of stop bys.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was pretty fun.
Pretty good stuff.
The best time, every time we have one of these events, and I say it on the show every time and I will continue to do so, is seeing our guys.
It's the people.
Like, we have Zoom calls with them, we talk on the phone, but seeing your best buddies in person.
Yeah.
And talking war stories, talking, you know, how they're running their business, how their families are doing.
Having them put up billboards in the front of the meeting room that just say, fuck you, Dave.
Dude, Ray had a shirt made.
And then he had a shirt made
that said, fuck you, Dave, on it. Yeah. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
That is the best part of the show.
Yeah.
It's hard to beat. I didn't think Roscoe was going to come. We have a new member, Roscoe. I don't think he listens to the podcast. He's from Hawaii.
Yeah.
Came to Indianapolis.
He came.
I may have told him he's crazy.
Yeah.
Super cool dude, though.
Yep.
Super cool dude.
Super cool dude.
It was a lot of fun.
We had a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. If you never made it to the wet show and you're into drain cleaning, lining, pipe bursting, it is the show to go to.
Yeah. And I mean, it's heavy on the industrial waste side of things. They had a lot of vac trucks and pump trucks and everything else. But
four inch and up drain cleaning, that's the show to go to.
Yeah.
The cameras, dude, the walkers.
You want a sewer camera, you're going to find everything from like an eight-wheel, 6-foot-long camera all the way down to a mini reel that'll go down an inch and a half pipe.
Did you see the one that had like one, it was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8 stainless steel arms?
Yeah.
And then it had poly, it looked like poly wheels on it.
Yep.
But the whole thing could crunch down
to
like 10 inch and then go out to like 2-foot pipe.
Yep.
But then the camera stayed.
Yeah. In the middle.
Dude, that was cool as shit.
Yeah.
That was cool. And I don't even do any of that crap.
Right.
But that's some real heavy engineering shit.
Yeah.
It was pretty badass.
What's funny is they're all controlled with Xbox or PlayStation controllers.
Are they really?
Yeah. Because that's the controller format that everyone's familiar with.
Isn't that how that submarine was driven that imploded and killed all those people?
Well, it didn't implode because of the Xbox
No, I'm not saying that, but you're right. Like, everyone knows how to use it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just the layout that everyone's used to.
That's scary tech, too.
Yeah.
Like, okay, the whole world knows how this works, so use it for everything.
Yeah. Yep.
I shouldn't say scary. Convenient.
I bought a couple of cameras for the plumbing company while I was there. They had, Milwaukee's were 15% off. Rigid's were 20% off.
Oh, did you end up getting them?
Yeah, I bought two.
Oh, I thought you were butthurt because they wouldn't give them to you right there.
Well, yeah, they didn't give them to me right there. I had to order them.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah.
But they still gave you the discount, shipped them out.
Well, and
assuming.
And at the money that you're paying for all this shit, like, it saves you $1,500, $2,000.
Yeah, that stuff's expensive.
Yeah, it's a, you know, $12,000 setup that you're getting 15 or 20% off on. So it's a fair amount. So
there were brand new Bobcat 35 there too. We saw the first day we were loading in.
Yep, yep.
The guy's like, I can get you a deal.
Yeah.
I was like, it's cool. I don't need a 35, but thanks.
So did you notice why that Bobcat was there? They weren't trying to sell the Bobcat.
No, they were selling the attachment.
Yeah. They have an attachment that's for pipe bursting to where it just runs your thing all the way down in the ditch on the end of the Bobcat. It's really sweet.
It looked pretty cool.
Yeah.
Maybe you should get one.
No, I don't want that one, but the new Hammerhead unit is looking pretty good for pipe bursting.
Which one is that?
I'll have to show you videos.
Okay.
But
it's
small and compact. It's a lot better than what we have right now. So
that stuff, it's surprising to me how big a hole you got to open for some of that equipment to work.
Yeah.
I would think that attachment for that E35 would make it nice. Your hole doesn't have to be as big.
Yeah, you still got to get down there and work. But the idea of the attachment is it just saves you from being in the ditch.
Yeah.
I mean, you still got to get down there and cut pipe and feed stuff around. Yeah, but you're just not operating the machine while standing next to it in the bottom of the ditch.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we usually dig about a 4 foot wide by 6 foot long hole.
That's not
for
bad.
What we do. It's not bad.
That's not bad.
Got to be at least 3 feet wide for our stuff to go in. So
yeah.
We like a little more room.
Had some cool lining stuff there, too.
Yeah. Yeah, tons of lining stuff. So solid show. If you guys listen to the show and you're in that kind of stuff, hit it up. It's a good deal.
Yeah, next year. I think it's the end of February next
year.
Yeah,
towards the end of the February, it's the same show time every year. Mm. So
I don't know if we'll go back or not. Maybe we'll hit up a different one or something. I know there's a big one in Texas that's geared more towards like residential plumbing.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll hit up an HVAC show.
Who knows? You never know where we're going to be.
We don't know where we're going to be.
Right. We're going to be in Maryland here in a month, so. But that's not for the public.
I just hate travel.
You just hate travel.
I love my clients.
Yeah.
I hate to travel.
Yep.
You know what? I always said I will never be one of those crotchety old men.
You are.
It's not looking good for me
nope,
right now.
No, it's not looking good. It's not. No, it's just not good. You're already there.
Hey, thanks for being supporting.
Hey, that's what I can do.
You're a real ass.
So,
what do you want to talk about, buddy?
Today, we are talking about standards.
Okay.
And we are talking about once you have standards set in your business to never waver from those standards. Because the moment you waver from that standard, you now set a new standard. And that new standard is subpar to your old standard.
Yeah. Don't want to lower the bar.
Right. And so where this really applies is as you guys are listening to the show and you're getting your teams of people or trying to envision what teams of people are going to look like, and maybe you don't have a lot of leadership experience. So one movie I would recommend to watch if you are new into leading people is Coach Carter with Samuel L. Jackson.
It's a great movie.
Great movie.
I think we talked about this a few shows ago. Great
movie. And
film.
He takes a team that's never won a game or rarely wins games, and he takes them all the way to like the state championship or the state playoffs or something like that.
I don't remember.
But they're basically a bunch of misfits that have never really had good coaching. They've never been held accountable. It's kind of the inmates running the prison kind of thing. And he gets sought out sought after to be their coach, and he goes in there and he just enforces very simple but very hard cut standards. You arrive to practice on time or you're doing like 200 suicides, and the first person in the movie to miss practice is his own son. Holds the standard.
Yeah. Can't waver.
And he does some other things where he starts out by making them all practice defense and strength and conditioning and agility, and that's it. They don't even they play their first game of the season, and they've never practiced one single offensive play. They haven't shot a basket, nothing.
I love it.
They've just strength and conditioning and defense. And they end up winning their first game without practicing offense because that's how important all the standards are to the small stuff. So then after they win their first game, he's like, okay, we're going to teach you, I think it's 4 or 5 plays, and he names all the plays after ladies. He's got like Linda and Julie and all of this stuff. And,
yeah.
That way he can just call out a lady's name from the sidelines and everybody knows what to do. But it's a very good movie if you look at it from a leadership perspective of how well a team performs when you watch the small shit. And so how this translates to business is, let's say you have a small team of guys and there's one guy that performs well, sells a lot, whatever the case may be.
Okay.
But he's all the time not doing the little shit. He's not asking for Google reviews. His shirt's never tucked in. He's always late to the meetings. He's always late to his calls.
The dash of the truck looks like shit.
Right,
I hate
right.
That.
The truck looks
God,
substandard, all
that.
That stuff. That is a very dangerous person to employ at any company. And the reason why is because that person sets their own rules and they're allowed to do it based off of their performance. In other words, I sell the most. They're not going to fire me. I don't have to have a clean truck. That's for the other people.
Well, they're allowed to run the razor's edge.
Yeah.
They just are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's a very, as a manager, it's a very difficult person to keep under control.
Yeah.
Or to keep from spreading cancer. And like, if you make him unhappy because you're trying to enforce standards and he's not open to it,
mm-hmm.
like he can become a cancer instantly.
Yeah.
Dude, when I was young, that was me.
Yeah.
Like I just outran everyone else. I didn't give a fuck. I mean, and to the detriment of everyone else, like I made it probably a worse place to work for the other guys.
Yeah.
Like if you want to be 100% truthful.
Yeah. And what also happens with that is the rest of the team sees somebody getting special treatment simply because of the results that they produce.
Teacher's pet, man.
Yeah. And so now the rest of the team isn't, standards don't matter to the rest of the team as much because Hotshot's not following the standards.
Yeah.
So why should I?
Yeah.
And so it just, it becomes a waterfall effect. And if anything, your higher performance, you should hold more accountable to the standards. Your higher performers, you should hold more accountable to the standards. In other words, like, you know, if you're less than 5 minutes early, you're late kind of thing, right? And I'm not saying I do this. I'm just giving you an example.
I love the 5 minutes early thing.
If you're less than 5 minutes early, you're late. Well, if the new guy or the apprentice or the low producer, if he shows up 3 minutes before the meeting, he's still before the meeting, right?
Yeah.
But then if you're high performer, the model of your company, the guy that people are trying to emulate, replicate, behave like, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, if he shows up 1 minute before the meeting, you got to pull that guy aside and be like, dude, you're better than this. You know, you can't be letting these other guys show up before you and so on.
Well, and the way to do that is you have to convince them, not convince them. You have to make it obvious to them that they are the standard. They are the best. And everyone looks up to you, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you someday want to be a manager, you're on that path now.
Yeah.
Like all of these guys are looking at you and saying, oh, that's how John does it. I got to do it like John does.
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up, the one day be a manager thing. The guys that grow with a company and move up through a company, it's not the highest sales guy. It's not the highest sales performer. It's the guy who honors the standards the best.
I agree with that, but that usually tends to be the most high performers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because they do all of the little things well
mm-hmm.
that allow them to succeed and be in that situation.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. But there is a big misnomer there that, oh, well, he got that job just because he was the best sales guy or whatever. And to me, it scares the shit out of me to promote your best sales guy to a manager.
Well, because you're losing revenue.
You're losing a sales guy.
Number one. Right? Yeah.
But
I mean, unless...
he can teach.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Others. Not to side tangent, but if you know that the guy can teach and takes guys under his wing on his own,
yeah.
like that's the guy that you immediately want to promote.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Because now he's... All of that skill set is going to everyone else that's underneath him.
Yep.
So...
Yeah, but ultimately, that's the guy who gets promoted is the guy who does all the little things well. And those little things are what establish your culture and your brand. And ultimately, if you set standards and then you waver on those standards, now your culture takes a hit, your teamwork takes a hit, and everything takes a hit. It's different to set standards with a goal attached to them and then realize that the goal may have been too aggressive. And you have to extend the timeline to hit the goal, right? So let's just say I wanted to do $1 million in revenue this year. Well, that's $1 million in revenue in 12 months, right? Maybe last year I did 750 in revenue, okay? And so this year the goal is $1 million. Well, maybe it takes me 13 months or 14 months to hit the million.
Yeah.
That's still progress, but... Notice how I moved the timeline. I didn't move the goal.
Yeah.
Right? I wanted to do $1 million in 12 calendar months. and so on. And so I tended to, as our company was growing, I looked at when you grow quick enough, you can't wait for calendar years to tell you things. And so I looked at like rolling 12 months, and I wanted rolling 12 months to always be increasing because, you know, let's say I did 1 million last year and now I want to do, 1.3 million. Okay, cool.
You want to do 1.3 million over a 12-month span, whether that's January to January, February to February, March to March. It doesn't matter. People miss the importance of the rolling goal,
yeah,
per se, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's not just January 1 to December 31.
Yeah.
Like, people, I think, set aside the fact that you always want to be improving, right? Mm-hmm. So what were my numbers from February 1 to January 31?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
You always have to be looking to improve, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, and for me, I just didn't want to wait the full calendar year to say like, okay, we did this 1 year and we did this the next. And
you okay?
Got a case of the yawns today.
Do you? Let me slap you. Does that help? Come here. I will.
Like we did our first $1 million year in a calendar year where we only did like 770 in work.
Oh, like a March to March or April to April?
Let's go like June, May to May.
Okay.
May to May.
So picked up when you got busy and you had implemented the changes at the beginning of the year, they start to make effect in June.
Right.
Okay, now we're rolling forward. Now I have another realistic 12 months to look at.
Yeah.
Say, hey guys, from June to June, we did this.
Yeah.
You know, we reached our goal.
I opened in August and ran solo until like May or June. And then in May, I hired a guy, and in June, I hired a guy. And so like, by the end of that year, I had only been a staff of 3 trucks for a little over half the year. And so like, I can't hang my hat on that year's numbers because they were low, because I didn't staff up until middle third of the year, right? But
yeah,
I was able to look at the individual months that we were doing, and we were already pacing for $1 million years well before that year was over.
Yeah.
It takes $83,333 a month to have $1 million year. And we were doing $90,000 and $100,000 months with 3 trucks on the road.
Yeah.
And so ultimately, if that's the standard, you got to mind everything that it takes to build into that. And employees are great at 2 things. They are great at helping set the standard and helping reinforce the standard. And they are great at challenging the standard.
The employees, to their credit, their job is to challenge the standard. Because if they never challenged a standard, it wouldn't exist. The need for management wouldn't exist.
Correct.
You know what I mean? So it's one of those, it's a give and take.
Yeah. And as you are working with standards, you praise in public and you coach in private. And so when a guy embodies your standard and sets an example that you want other people to do, you praise that guy in public in front of the other people. You let everybody on the team know that when you do good things, you get attaboys from the boss in public.
Yeah.
But then when a guy breaks the standard, you never reprimand them in public. For one, it greatly demoralizes the individual, but it also puts a black mark on your leadership ability in front of the team, because the team doesn't respect public reprimand like you may think they do.
It demoralizes the team too.
Yeah.
People feel empathy.
Yeah.
And they don't want to, like, people, bad managers want to say, well, when I reprimand someone in public, now everyone knows not to do that.
Mm-hmm.
The employee that you reprimanded in private is going to tell guys, and it's going to move around.
Yeah.
Okay? So don't think that that does, like, people want to think that that doesn't happen. It happens.
Yeah, you don't have to do it in public for everybody to see it.
But to your point, it makes them lose respect for you.
Yeah.
And that is a huge problem. Once you go down that path, like, one week of mistrust takes 6 months to regain.
Yep.
And especially in an area like that, like, oh, man, if I fuck up, he's going to X, Y, and Z. Why would I go out of my way to benefit him in this business?
Yep.
You lost all credibility.
Yeah.
Instantly.
The only time I've ever reprimanded anybody in public is when they tried to challenge me in public. And I didn't even give them the full reprimand in public, but I definitely set a standard that if you have complaints or challenges, you bring those up in private.
Yeah, I don't want to see someone or let everyone else see me assaulting you. So we do that in my office with the door
there
fucking
you go.
Shut. You
there
know?
You go. Yeah. But standards, we're not talking big standards. Standards are not like sell $10,000 a week. Okay, that's a goal. That's a performance benchmark. Okay, standards are we don't drive like assholes.
Right? We don't flip off the general public when you're in a company vehicle.
Right.
Even if they have it coming.
Yeah.
Like,
standards are, we have a process and we follow the process to a T every time and we trust the process. That's the standard.
Yeah.
The standard, if enforced, and if it's a good standard and enforced properly, produces great results. But the standard is not great results. Okay. Yeah. In other words, the standard is inputs. The results are outputs. And so if you're ever looking at, like, can this be a standard or not, just make sure you, like, standards are only controlled on the input side of things. In other words, like, if I have a standard to get up at 6:30 every day, that doesn't mean I'm going to have a productive day. It just means that I held my end of the bargain and I got up at 6:30.
Yeah. The outcome may not be every time I get up at 6:30, I have a fantastic day.
Right.
Because that's an impossible standard to uphold.
Well, and you're not in control of it.
But the standard you can set for yourself is, I'm up at 6:30, regardless of what happens after that.
Yeah.
I go to a customer's house and I say, hey, Mrs. Jones, how are you doing today? You may not make that sale, but you followed the process, and the process is the standard. You know, the process is, we collect payment at the end of every job. Well, Jimbo Jambo over here he forgets half the time and says the office will send you an invoice.
Yep.
That's not the process. That's not the standard we're setting for our employees. What are you doing?
Right.
It's a disruption. Anytime a standard isn't met, it's a disruption in the process of the business, regardless of where it's at.
Yeah.
What does Ray say all the time that's in TradeWinds? The standard is the standard.
The standard is the
standard. His employees, literally, when something happens, they will say, well, Ray says it's the standard is the standard.
Yep.
That's great leadership. They know the standard is the standard. We have to follow it. If we all follow it, we will all do well.
Yep. Yeah. You know, you wouldn't want to set a standard of, like, make 3 sales today, because you can't control that. But you could set a standard that I make a minimum of 30 sales calls today. You have control over the amount of effort you put out.
Or I'm going to give 3 options to every sales call I have the opportunity to go to.
Right. Right. And so standards are all inputs, and standards are very small. It's not this big. Now, when you combine all your standards together, it seems large. But if your company standard is that we wear shoe covers in every home, that's a very small thing. That's the shoe cover standard is we wear them in every home. And if you don't wear them in one home, you broke standard. So standards are also very easily black and white. They're very easy to tell. Did we abide by standard or did we not?
Yeah, it's not a judgment call.
Right. There shouldn't be a lot of nuance in standards either. Shouldn't be subject for interpretation, right?
If this happens, this happens. If this happens, this happens. No.
Right. And so we do have, I'm not going to say it's nuance free, because, like, in our company, we don't have a shoe cover rule. Our shoe cover rule is take them into consideration, but read the room. And the reason why is because I've been in some houses that are nasty. And I go to put my shoe covers on because that's the policy, the standard. And the customer says, oh, you don't need to worry about that. Look at these carpets. They're atrocious. And the moment I say, well, it's company policy and I got to do it.
Shampoo them, bitch.
Oh. Now I'm driving a wedge between my relationship with the customer over a standard. And I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
And so
a good rule of thumb is if the standard, you know, makes it difficult for you to build a know, like, and trust with a customer, it's out the window.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And so, you know, our guys, they consider shoe covers. They have them in their pocket, ready to wear. But again, it's kind of a case by case thing. I had one guy that wouldn't wear shoe covers. He'd just slip off his shoes.
I used to do that a lot.
And, you know, he said that was a lot easier than wearing shoe, because shoe covers leak and they get holes in them. And
you're changing them all the time. It's just a waste of fucking money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he would just 100% slip off his shoes, and that was the way he handled it. So, I think his excuse for that was he went to a house one time that had freshly done wood floors, and he had a rock in his shoe.
Mm.
And it scratched that kind floor. Of scratched up the Fuck. Floor even through the shoe cover, you know?
Yeah.
And so
I always carried, I had boots, a pair of tennis shoes, and then a pair of clean boots.
Yep.
You know, and I was just, we've talked about it all the time. I'm a little nuts.
Yeah.
But I wanted to be prepared for every situation. So,
yeah.
You know.
Well, and one way to enforce really good standards is if you guys are on a CRM, a lot of times you can build checklists in your CRM for all the things that you're doing on a call.
Yeah.
And those can help remind your guys of all of the little mini standards that you have that you want them doing. So speaking of CRMs, FieldPulse is the field service management software for field service pros like you. Whether you're a small business looking to grow or a larger company ready to scale, it's got everything you need all in one platform. It has advanced features to run your CRM, your estimates and invoices, your scheduling and dispatching, good, better, best proposals. It'll even handle your maintenance plans and import the TradeWinds price book. Plus, FieldPulse integrates with software you are currently using, like QuickBooks Online and your desktop PC. So now you can hit the ground running without changing everything about how you work. And by simplifying your day-to-day operations, FieldPulse saves you time, keeps your team organized, gives you the tools to increase productivity and profitability. And it's not just us saying this. FieldPulse has earned a 4.8 rating over 600 Google reviews. So to learn more, head over to fieldpulse.com. That's FieldPulse.com.
I mean, I don't know if I've ever said, thank you for reading something on time, but thank you, buddy. New standard,
right?
Thank you.
But the little checklists inside your CRM are a great way to help with that. One other thing that we tried, and this was hard to enforce in our business because it was just too clunky. We put out a thing for a while, and we still have it, called the One Block Away, One Takeaway. And it was basically like a Google form. It was a Google checklist.
Yeah, like they pull over, they go over the form, make sure they did everything, and they're not too far away.
The idea was they would drive a block away from the house, and the form ended. The last question on the form is, what's one takeaway that you learned from this service call? But the idea was like all of our little sales process standards. Like, we have a process for acknowledging the pet and giving them a customized dog treat. And we have a process for telling the customers about our Smedley family plan. And we have a process for telling our customers about our Family First program and all of these things. And so the idea of the form was kind of a post-flight checklist to see if we met all those standards. And it's kind of, it's on the honor system, but the idea was, if a guy is willing to run that post-flight checklist, he really cares about his results. And I would be very skeptical to, you know, as guys go into a slump, they typically want to point the finger outward all the time. Well, these are bad calls. These are bad customers. Dispatch is giving me bad calls. They're setting the call up wrong. It was in a bad area, you know, all these things. And it's never, ever the service tech, right? And
guilty.
I would. Oh, we're all guilty of it.
Guilty, especially when you're young.
Yeah, but I don't take those claims into consideration at all if you're not doing your post-flight checklist.
Post-flight, I love it.
well, like pilots have a pre-flight checklist. And so here's the difference between, this is why airline travel is the safest form of travel, is because they do a pre-flight checklist before that plane leaves the ground every time.
Every person that's related to the crew has a pre-flight checklist.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And
pilot, co-pilot, yep. I want to say stewardess, flight attendant.
Yeah.
All of them, bag check guy, like all have one.
Yep. And as they're doing that, they're ensuring the plane works properly before it leaves. Imagine if we all did that with our cars every time we drove anywhere. Check the tires. Like semi-truck drivers have to do it every day.
Well, they're supposed to.
Yeah.
You mean I checked my windshield wiper fluid. I checked my oil. I checked to make sure the antifreeze before I started it up was full. The reservoir was full. Brake fluid was full. Air pressure was full. All the seat belts worked. None of the warning lights came on. Like, if you had to do that every time, it'd take you an extra 20 minutes before you went anywhere.
It'd take you an extra time, but if you put that much care into your... And everybody put that much care into their vehicle before they drove, car accidents would go down.
Shelled engines. Let's talk about oil.
Yeah.
Shelled engines would be almost obsolete.
Maintenance would go down, right? All of those things. And so, now, it's not really practical in the automobile world, and I'm not trying to say it should be, but what I'm saying
is... It's just a good example.
That is why airline travel is so safe. And so we can't, in the service world, we can't do a pre-flight checklist because that pre-flight checklist is going to be, will I tell the customer about our Smedley family plan? Will I tell the customer about our Family First program? Like, I can promise until I'm blue in the face that I will,
but
do I actually do it?
You can have a pre-flight checklist for a service call until you meet the customer.
Right.
I park where they can see my van.
Yeah.
I have my shoe covers in my pocket. You know, I have my tablet in my hand. I don't have to go back out to the truck to get it. I have all of my tools in my hand. I checked and make sure I didn't have food on my face from lunch.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, you can do that, but it's a very small amount of the sales process.
Yeah. And so at the end of the service call, that's where that post-flight checklist comes in, because now you're able to say, like, oh, crap, I forgot to give the dog a treat. Or I forgot to hand write a thank you card. Or I forgot to ask for the Google review, or all of those things, which is all part of the standard, right?
Yeah.
But it's just a way to help recognize small deviations from the standard. Because nobody recognizes the first deviation or the third. But what they do recognize is my paycheck is crap because my performance sucked. And because I don't recognize all those small deviations, well, now I'm going to blame everybody else. And I'm going to blame the calls. I'm going to blame dispatch.
Yeah.
I'm going to blame the customers. I'm going to blame the season. I'm going to blame the weather. Like, who knows,
yeah.
Right? But if I don't take all of those finger-pointing claims to heart at all unless you can show me that you are abiding by all the standards. And it truly is one of those things.
Yeah, if you've taken care of all your responsibilities and your sales performance is still shit.
Yeah.
Then it's either... You need to be an installer, or maybe you're right. Maybe you are getting all the shit calls.
Well, and sometimes,
you know,
we just have slumps.
Yeah.
But we don't even know it's a slump until we can prove that I did everything right.
I don't have slumps.
I just had three or four bad customers in a row.
Yeah, that happens.
Yeah.
You know, should probably have that, just side tangent, that little bit of post-flight checklist before you collect payment.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Instead of down the road, we're going to do this a block, you know, away. Like, before we collect payment, have we done all of these things?
Yeah. Yeah. That's actually a really good idea. I might consider that.
That's a great idea.
I've never considered it, so that's pretty solid.
You're welcome. Well, I think all good salesmen and guys that don't need the post-flight checklist, they do those things before the invoice is collected regardless.
Right.
You know, like, they have a mental note. They're high functioning.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they're great salesmen. All of that stuff is at the front of mind, if maybe you could squeeze that in there.
Well, and you look at anybody who does things on an incredibly high level. I'll use Patrick Mahomes, for example, just because he's our local QB. But Patrick Mahomes, part of the reason he's good is because he relies on the feedback from others. He enjoys being coached, right? The Chiefs are going to have a new offensive coordinator next year. It's not new to the Chiefs, but it's a different OC than what they've had. They're bringing back Eric Bieniemy. And Patrick Mahomes was very vocal about it that he likes Eric Bieniemy because he will hold the standard. He will hold guys accountable, which kind of gives you the indicator that maybe the prior Matt Nagy, the prior offensive coordinator, was not that great at holding guys accountable.
Nah, he kind of a soft, I think.
Yeah, but so Patrick Mahomes doesn't go out there and says, I got this. He doesn't go out there and say, I don't need your standards. I don't need your coaching. I'm God's gift to football. No, he goes out there and he says, I'm good at football because I take coaching and I respect the coach's input. And so when he's getting worked over on a play, you know, keep in mind, he only sees half the field, right? He can't see behind him. And so when he's getting worked over on a play, he has to rely on his coach's observations
of what's
for
happening.
What's happening on his blind side. And, you know, if he just gets mugged by a guy, he can't just go straight blame the offensive lineman that let him pass through. He needs to, you know, hey, offensive lineman, what's going on? Oh, I'm getting double teamed and I can't take them both. Okay, cool. Let's get you some help kind of thing.
That's the coach's job.
Right. And so, you know, it's kind of wild once you start paralleling professional athletes to all of the coaching they receive. And it's like, well, no wonder they're so amazing. Like, they have a nutrition coach, a strength and agility coach, an offensive coach, a throwing coach.
Yeah.
You know, offensive coordinator, a head coach. Like, there's no shortage of coaches there, right? And then you also look at how many hours of work they put in on the practice field and in the gym and in the film room compared to how many hours of work they put in on the field, right? 3.5 hour game, 60 minutes on the clock, but 3.5, 4 hour game. And these guys are working 40 hours a week for 40 weeks a year, probably.
Dude, they're working 60 hours a week.
Right.
70 hours a week.
I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, no, I get it.
But they're working 40 hours a week minimum for like 40 weeks out of the year to go play for 16 games.
17
games. You're right. And so, like, meanwhile, you go back to the home service industry. Where do we practice? In the customer's home. Like, we practice at game time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, we rarely practice all of those things. And then no wonder we wonder why our performance is shit. And it's like, you know, we're going to go out there and play the Colts without watching any game film, without warming up, without practicing, no calisthenics. We're going to skip the gym for a week. Now let's go out there and expect to beat the Colts. Well, this year you probably could have done it.
Well, and but, I mean, to that point too, like, if you're a business owner, manager, whatever, if you're not actively coaching those guys on those standards before the calls happen and you're only looking at what happens after, and they feel like they're running around with no guidance, like, that is a problem.
Yeah.
They have no idea what they're running into or what you expect until after they've made mistakes or after sales volume is down or, sorry, revenue volume is down, you know, per call that they're running.
Yep.
Like, you've got to be the leader.
Yeah.
You've got to set those standards of, hey, this is, I have these processes in place. We're going to run the plays this way. When you're in the home, you're going to act this way. The sales process is this. And then after that, if after 2 months they're shit and we need to change how we're doing things, I'm open to that. I'm hoping you're open to that. But if you're not having any of that conversation up front, you're just setting them up and your business up for failure.
And your guys want to be coached. They may not tell you that, and they may actually tell you the opposite.
Well,
but
whether they, quote unquote, want to be coached or not, they usually need to be coached if their mindset is that.
And
you know,
sometimes we're just resistant to coaching, right? Because coaching is literally being told you're not doing it the best you could do it better. But, and some people have a hard time taking that.
Well, people have a hard time realizing that if I'm open to coaching, I could be making more money.
Yeah.
They don't put those two things together.
Right.
I think is why sometimes, well, that and pride is why we're so hesitant to take people's advice, which is coaching, let's be honest.
Well, and go on the other side of that. So the standards, right? The business owner, the manager is the one setting those standards. It's not a pride thing there either. It's not, I set these standards because it's my way or the highway. It's, I set these standards because when I stand back and look at this at a 30,000 foot view, pragmatically, these standards create success. And so that's why I love the standard. I don't love the standards because I came up with them. I love the standards because I challenged them enough to know that if we do all of these things, like, you know, our customer experience process is probably a total of about 25 different things. And
yeah,
maybe 30 different things. And so
it sounds like a lot, but for that's not a lot.
It sounds like a lot
for a service business,
but
it's not.
But I'll dive into them here in a second. Let's say it's 30 things. Those 30 things, I'm not proud of those because I came up with them. I'm proud of those because I saw results. I wondered if things could be improved. We tweaked the standard a little bit. We saw better results, and so we maintained the new standard. Or the opposite. We saw results. We wondered if they can be improved. We tweaked the standard. Results went down, and we said, okay,
yeah,
we got to go the other way,
yeah.
Right? And so prime example of these 30 things is one of our standards is our CSRs. When somebody books a call, our CSRs write down word for word what the customer said. And if the customer said, my water heater's making a hissy pissy noise, that's the call notes. Water heater is making a hissy pissy noise.
That's and, just when mine's on. I can hear it. I can hear it upstairs. It's crazy.
Yeah. But the reason that's part of our customer experience standard is because later on in this process, our plumber, we don't use this whole like text, automated text, your plumber's on the way bullshit. Like we reach out, like we don't let automations creep in on the customer
experience. It's another touch point for you.
Yeah. And so what we do is our plumbers, part of our standard is our plumbers will call their next customer when they're headed that way.
Yeah.
And part of that standard is they will say their name, they will say the customer's name, they will pad their arrival time by 5 minutes, and they will ask the customer if they need anything when they're on the way, and then they will recite what's in their call notes. And so if I'm a plumber, I'm on the phone with my soon-to-be customer that has never met me yet, but now they know my name, they know when I'm going to get there, they know that it's padded by, well, they don't know it's padded by 5 minutes, they're going to find that out eventually when I show up a minute or two early. But now they also know we listen in our company, because they know that they were using silly language on the phone when they booked the call. Oh, my water heater's making a hissy-pissy noise.
No, like, and trust right out the gate, bro.
And so now me as the plumber, when I recite word for word what the customer told our CSR, now the customer knows we as a company listen.
Yeah.
And they don't have to repeat their whole life story to everybody they talk to.
Yeah.
And so then when we get to the customer's house, we park with our truck in view of the front door. If that's the driveway, great. If that's the road, great. If you work for a company that says, don't park in the driveway because I don't want to clean up oil, then tell your boss to buy fucking better trucks. Because leaking oil in the street ain't no better than leaking oil in the customer's driveway.
That's another talk for another day. I mean, yes.
But you know, we want to pull into the customer's driveway if we can.
Well, less travel time to the truck if you've got to go there.
It's a better billboard in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Because if you're looking down the street and my truck's in the street, you can't see what's on my truck. But if my truck's in the driveway perpendicular to the street, now anybody looking down the street can see what's on the truck, right?
Yeah.
And so, but the driveway kind of needs to be in view of the front door and all this stuff. We have a whole lot of other processes, but those are all the mini standards, right? And those little tiny standards are what we uphold. And if we do all of those right, the results follow, right? And if I don't uphold any of those, well, now let's say we dropped all the ball on all that stuff. Well, now the customer calls in, the CSR says, I don't know, something's wrong with the heater. And that's the call notes. And we let automation text our customer that we're on the way. And now our guy gets there, Maybe the customers didn't get a text. Maybe,
yeah.
You know, now the guy doesn't park in view of the door. He's not wearing his uniform, or he is, and it's not tucked in.
Tripped on all those cracks on the way there.
All that stuff. So now the customer's opening the door to a complete stranger that they don't know, they don't like, and they don't trust. And then we get there and we say, well, I hear something wrong with the heater. And now the customer has to repeat the whole story again to us.
Yeah.
And it's just starting the whole process off on a bad foot. So that's why those standards are there in our company. And that's why we see such great Google reviews. And that's why we see such great sales performance and everything else. And so it's not because we're going in there and putting the customer over a barrel and saying, oh, you got to buy this now. And it's take it or leave it. Or we're not lying to the customer to develop urgency or anything else. No games. It's just straightforward, good, honest, wholesome human interaction. And we follow that all the way through with a whole lot of other things as well. But those are those little standards that make a big difference in the outcome of the call. So when my guys start complaining about, you know, oh, bad calls, bad customers, bad CSR, bad dispatch, bad schedule, all this stuff, if I don't have proof that you followed your end of the deal on all of those standards, then I'm not going to trust you on your claims otherwise.
Yeah. And like, let's be honest, the companies that want to charge good rates, your business, how we talk to the guys in Tradewinds, like you should be charging X, right? The only ones that get away, I shouldn't say get away, the only ones that are able to charge the actual rates that they are able to charge or should be charging are the ones that set small standards, follow through the small standards, have a serious process, hold their guys to the process, automatically have the customer's trust, like you were saying, when they go into the house. The only ones that can do that are the ones that set standards, small to large, and then have their employees, quote unquote, make their employees, like mm-hmm. I say make loosely, uphold those standards. Like, it's a giant lift to get to $600 an hour,
mm-hmm.
billable hour, right?
Yep.
How do we get there, though? Small baby steps.
Yeah.
What are the small baby steps? They're initiating no like and trust on the phone when a customer calls.
Mm-hmm.
They're initiating no like and trust when you get to the house. They're initiating no like and trust when they're in the home.
Yeah.
But the only way that an average plumber, HVAC tech, electrician, whatever can get to that is following a very small step-by-step process to get there.
Yep.
Right? And the only way that that process is laid out is through setting small standards at every turn, at every little step of the way before they get into the home, when they're in the home, when they're asking for that credit card, when they're leaving the home.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, all of those little things add up to great customer service, to great quality of work, to high tickets, to high net profit, to high wages for your guys, to great benefits for your employees, to great company parties. All of those things can only be obtained at the highest level if there's a small step-by-step-by-step process that you hold them to, which is the standard.
Yeah.
The standard is the standard. If I don't hold my employee to the step-by-step process the whole way, none of those things are going to happen. He's not going to have a great high average ticket. We can't charge a competitive rate in our area, regardless of where that is.
Yep.
He can't have health insurance. He can't make $120K a year. None of that happens if you don't set the standard day fucking one, when you start your business, when you hire your employee, when you build a process. None of that shit fucking happens.
Yeah. And where all these standards come from is, does it enhance or detract from the customer experience?
Yeah.
And so, like, we're in a service business, and so the customer experience is the pinnacle of our focus. All of our focus is driven on the customer experience. And so you brought up a good one about, like, taking payment. One of the ways where we found out there was a ripple in the customer experience, a hiccup, so to speak, is how many service businesses charge extra for credit cards? A lot.
Yeah.
Too many.
And you shouldn't. We teach in TradeWinds. Don't build it into your price.
Right. Show me.
Don't turn them off.
Show me any large company out there that serves millions of people on the regular that charges extra for the most common form of payment in the world.
Yeah. You're not going to Walmart and paying more.
Right. Walmart's not adding 3% to your bill because you paid with a card.
I can hear the fucking idiots now. Hey, you know, the banks, like, we got to get off credit cards because every credit card just makes the banks richer. You're right.
You're right, but you got to play the game.
Your job's also to make money. Yeah. So just move past it.
Yeah.
Do the same thing. We could talk about that another day.
Yeah, you still got to play the game, right?
That's right.
And so you jack up all your prices by 3%, and then you happily take any way, any method of payment the customer wants to
give. If they write you a check, you made 3%, dog.
Yeah.
Which may be $4.75. Okay, yeah. Relax. Move on with your life.
Might be $300. Depends on the size of the check, you know?
Maybe.
But
I doubt it.
Right. Keep in mind, though, like if you solve that problem, then the customer's going to be like, oh, do you guys take checks or can I pay with a credit card or whatever? Now that you don't charge extra for credit cards, our guys will literally tell them, like, yeah, if you get miles and points, put that thing on a credit card. Get your miles and points. Our guys are encouraging customers to use credit cards because we don't want them to have to, we don't want any ripples in the customer experience, right?
You want to make it as smooth as possible. Your job is to make their life better,
easier, ever go to the gas station?
More convenient.
You ever go to the gas station and you swipe your card and it says, please see attendant?
Yeah, I drive to the next fucking gas station.
Exactly. You either drive to the next gas station or you drive to the next pump, right? So
it's mostly because the card I'm using is stolen, but whatever.
Charging credit card fees is the same feeling to a customer in their home.
Yeah, I know.
And so, like, don't do that. Like,
don't just do that.
Just happily take whatever method of payment they'll give you.
That's fantastic.
So,
you just, especially, like, I don't want to get onto a thing here, but people are crybabies. They just are. Okay, they're sensitive. It's just how we are right now.
Yep.
And if your job is to make the most money as possible, which it is, you have to, how do I say this nicely? You have to deal with them being sensitive about everything. So try to smooth over every pinch point before it happens.
Yeah.
Credit cards is a great example of that.
And let the customer experience drive your standards. Don't let your humility drive it. Don't let your pride drive it. Don't let your ability to say it's my way or the highway drive it. If you have friction with a business partner or a colleague or a spouse or something like that, don't let the idea of who came up with the idea drive the standard. It doesn't matter. If the standard is the customer experience, then it doesn't matter who comes up with the idea. Just like what you said, hey, do your post-flight checklist before you grab their money.
Yeah.
Right? That's a great idea.
Of course it is.
It doesn't matter who came up with the idea.
No, it doesn't.
My allegiance to creating the best customer experience possible, it doesn't matter where the idea came from. Right?
Dude, when you bring it up to your ownership group, you tell them it was your idea. I don't give a shit.
It doesn't matter about that.
No, it's what helps us make more money.
Right. Right. And so if your allegiance is to the customer experience, then you're going to have a lot better standards. Because now it's not, well, this is the way I've always done it, so this is the way we're always going to do it. No. It's, does the customer still respond well to the way you've always done it? If so, cool. That's why we do it that way. We don't do it that way because it's the way you've always done it. We do it that way because it's still the best way for the customer to receive the experience we want to deliver.
Yeah.
That's why we do it that way. And sometimes the way we've always done it is the way that we keep doing it. Other times we got to change, right? Online booking, for example.
Got to be fluid, man.
Yeah. Online booking is now really popular. There's a lot of people that don't want to talk to people on the phone. There's a lot of customers that we call to let them know we're headed and they forward us to voicemail. And our process is we immediately follow it up with a text from the plumber's phone, not from the company, from the plumber's work phone, follow it up with a text that has everything in it that like I would talk to text this. I would say, hey, Mrs. Jones, this is Mitch with Smedley Plumbing. I'm heading your way to look at that water heater that's making a hissy pissy noise. I should be there at 8:47.
Yeah.
And then what's crazy is because these customers don't want to talk on the phone anymore, like they'll immediately respond to that text. Looking forward to meeting you.
Yeah, after they immediately sent you to voicemail.
After they just sent you to voicemail, right?
It's so crazy to me to even think like that's a real thing. You know me. I hate people.
Yeah.
In general. But I still will answer the phone when someone's coming to my house for certain. Like, it still blows my mind.
Yeah, no.
But it happens at an extremely high rate. It's crazy.
And it does.
Just is what it is.
You can't
deal with it.
Yeah, you can't fault the customer for it. This is their experience. And so you've got to have standards in your business that give the customer the best experience.
Well, you can fault them for it and think they're fucking completely insane, but you just got to roll with it. You got to be fluid.
Yeah.
Go with it. Give them what they want.
Yeah.
So that when you're at their house, you can sell them shit and make a lot of money.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it just is what it is, man.
Keep in mind, it's not going to be too long before you're going to be able to buy something off, like a plumbing item off Amazon and then pay for installation on Amazon. And then all of a sudden, here comes a subcontractor coming to your house.
I don't even want to fucking talk about this. I know it's coming.
It's happening.
I don't like it.
It's not going to be long until you call or like you go to ChatGPT and you say, hey, my water heater's making a hissy pissy noise. And ChatGPT says, oh, it sounds like a plumber may need to check it out. Would you like me to book you an appointment with a plumber? And ChatGPT books the appointment for you. And
you
don't
Chat.
Even know who's coming.
No,
and then
I don't.
Chat
I'm
just
out.
Says,
I'm out.
By the way, I searched the best plumbers in the area, and that was Smedley Plumbing. And so
well, that's not
you
the
have an appointment.
With.
You have an appointment with Smedley Plumbing on Wednesday at 10.
I know. Wait,
right?
And it's like, different. Like, let's be honest. I'm biased. It's different for people that have been in the trades.
Mm-hmm.
It just is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but for people that haven't been, you're right. They're completely comfortable with that.
Yeah.
Because they don't know. I'm going to sound like a crotchety old man. They don't know that 10 of those plumbers that are on that list are shit.
Right.
Like, you and I know that.
Yeah.
Because we've been in the field, but...
But keep in mind, you used to buy something off Amazon and you had to wait like a week to get it. And now I can buy something off Amazon at 8 p.m. and it's on my doorstep before I wake up the next morning.
Yeah,
on
you say that.
Some products.
Some products.
Not all of them, but...
I bought this side tangent. I bought Layla a... So we do the advent calendars. Janine buys her one every year. It's like, you know, before Christmas, it's a chocolate, it's a whatever. It was ornaments for her tree, and she put a little tree in her room.
Mm-hmm.
And by little, I mean full size, because she's crazy like me. But it was ornaments of different chickens.
Yeah.
It didn't come till January 31st.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was the 30th. I can't remember.
Yep.
But regardless.
It happened.
Side tangent.
Yeah.
It happens. And it will happen in the service industry too, but
yeah,
you know.
Yep. So as you guys are going around wondering how you're going to make a lot of money in the trades, you don't make a lot of money because you charge a lot of money. You make a lot of money because you have a really good customer experience, you set really good standards, and you enforce those standards. And a byproduct of that is making money. And so focus on the things that create the money. Don't focus on the money. Money's like a dog, and if you chase a dog, it'll run. And so focus on what it takes to treat the dog really well, and the dog will come to you. So, what?
I was going to make an analogy between dogs and women, and I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
Nope. I've learned my lesson.
There you go.
I may or may not have had my ass chewed a few times.
The
last couple of weeks, and so I'm just going to let that one go. But
yeah, that's funny.
Why don't you just wrap us up on that, man?
Yep. So, sorry for missing last week's show, everybody. It comes with the territory, but hopefully this show brought you value. If it made you think about things in a different way, if you could think of somebody who might need to hear this information, please do us a favor, and them a favor, and share this show with them. Just pull your phone out, hit the share button, and literally text the episode directly to them. So, until next time, guys, we will see you later.
Bye.